Welcome back to your Ball Was Out Tennis podcast presented by Tweener Head Tennis Phil. And today we have episode 2 of our new season of this podcast. And today we're having James from Universal Sports, aka Universal Tennis. And we have an awesome discussion talking about the pro tennis tour that they are providing for not only college athletes, but for pro tennis players as well. Looking at what benefits it provides to tennis players, NIL deals, what was it like being an associate head coach for the University of Tennessee, what made him switch from being an associate head coach to joining the Universal Sports world. Make sure you are subscribed to us on YouTube where you can watch the full video form of this chat with James. And without further ado, here's our conversation with James from Universal Tennis.
James, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you on, working with UTR, being a former college coach as well in Knoxville. And for you, I just appreciate, we had a pre-chat before we started recording about what was going on, and I'm very excited to have this conversation with you. So James, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for reaching out. I appreciate it. It's not all the time that I have people reaching out to me, so it's nice to have that on the receiving end when it comes to recording these types of chats. And James, just to start off, for you, coming into this year and coming from a coaching background, how did we get to this point in your life if we were to start with your tennis career?
Oh, great question. I would say, just a brief background. I mean, I'm from Scotland, played multiple sports growing up, and was in my last year of high school. And I said to myself, I want to go to the US and give it a shot. And to be honest, since then I've absolutely loved it. If it wasn't for Chase Hodges, actually, who was the coach at the time at Drake, I probably wouldn't be in the US because my grades at the time weren't so good. But he got me into school and absolutely loved all my 4 years at Drake. Met some great people. Actually was probably one of few players to have four coaches in 4 years. But with that, met great coaches, great people, great teammates, and since then just stayed in college tennis. That's kind of the journey.
And for you too, kind of coming into college tennis, where did you start before being at the University of Tennessee?
Yeah, so phase one after Drake was went to Fresno State when they had a men's team. Went there with my coach at the time, Evan Austin. So I went there, did a master's degree, coached as a GA, and then went to Tulane with legendary Mark Boris. Was there for 2 years. And then my wife, my fiance at the time, actually got a job in the state of Tennessee. So I met with Mark one day and said, Mark, I'm going to have to go in 6 months' time. And I didn't know what I was going to do. But then randomly got a call one day from Chris Woody at Tennessee. And he said, are you interested in the job? And I said, absolutely, because I'm coming that way anyway. So then went to Tennessee for 8 years. And now with UTR Sports. So there's the timeline.
That's an incredible timeline. Kind of everything just fell into place and the chips fell where they lie. And 8 years at one school, you don't really see that everywhere, to be honest. When it comes to head coaching or assistant or associate head coaches, that's a long time.
No, it's a phenomenal university athletic department. I think a lot of people can see the success that Tennessee Athletics has had. It's from the top. It's if you need something to help you succeed, let us know. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, the players that started off, we definitely built something from nothing to the top, to a powerhouse, which is from a coaching standpoint, it was amazing to see players not only succeed in the biggest environments, but also develop as genuine people. So that was a nice part of coaching. But yeah, no, we definitely had a lot of success. And I have to be honest, like I don't miss coaching whatsoever. I think I'm a very competitive guy. I think most people know that. But I don't miss it, and that might change. And that's definitely something. I think there's a lot of coaches out there that, to be brutally honest, like I've had a lot of calls from coaches since NIL began, right? And a lot of coaches are very frustrated, as they are in every sport. So I think coaches can definitely call me anytime they want just to see like what it's like leaving the coaching world and stepping into a completely different role, right? Where you're working remote or you're working from home or wherever. There's so many exciting things out there that coaches can take their what they do so well and that, work so hard and their competitiveness into any environment and be successful, in my opinion. So
Yeah, and I in those topic, and I feel like we will eventually get to those in terms of talking about NIL, and that's one of the things you put on your Instagram bio as well, is like, if you have any questions, reach out to me about NIL, what you're doing with Universal Tennis and UTR Sports, and I wanted to kind of go over your kind of coaching views in at Tennessee, because you probably had two of the best college players that you saw in the past 5 years with Monday and Walton. And excuse me, when working with them too, what did you notice about them that made them special? Or when you have talent like that, how do you notice that?
I think it starts with natural competitiveness. Just doing basic drills or basic point play in practice, they'd always want to win. They'd always want to try and, if we were doing some team event in practice or making it as competitive as possible. I think that's one thing we did at Tennessee is we tried to make practices so competitive that the matches actually were easier, right? But I would say with those two guys, very naturally competitive, whether it was they were trying to correct something that was a weakness or a deficiency, but also playing against their teammates. They'd always want to win. With that being said, I mean, Monday was 6 foot 6 and was left-handed and had a rocket. That definitely helps. Walton, six
No
foot
shit.
two. Read the court so well, doesn't really have a major weakness, sneaky good first serve, but also developed, bought into the system and developed. Like Walton at first, I remember he sat there in his freshman year, he said, "I don't want to play doubles. I hate doubles." He would never come to the net. And then he won NCAAs in doubles. So that's the beauty about college tennis is you get someone 400 in the world who thinks they're a pro, right? But actually, they're losing 20 grand a year. They come to college and they're playing five, right? And they're going, "Wait, coach, I thought you said I was going to play one." Like, you're just not that good. So going to college and the development there, and back to Monday and Walton, just that competitiveness.
It's so interesting to see how kids can develop so quickly and so fast and under the right system, like you said. And when you have players that have that potential and have that ability to go to the next step, like Walton currently cracked the top 100, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, he
Yep.
did. And
Yep.
Monday's on his way to that eventually, I hope. It's that competitiveness that you see is it's somewhat not it's life-changing, I would say, because when you have that mentality, just the simplest of things really does make the difference. Like, what's
Yeah.
one thing, I think, let me turn it back on you, is what's one thing you learned from Monday and Walton that you've kind of used every day?
I think this is very important in the game of tennis, actually, to relate that question to is everyone has their own journey, right? Everyone has a path. And I think one of the faults I give to tennis in general is you're meant to do this. Like you're meant to follow this. You're meant to play these events. You're meant to play futures when you get to this. You're meant to, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
you don't have to follow what other people are doing. If you truly know in your heart of hearts as a player that you are most happy and comfortable in this environment, and you know in your heart that this is what makes you feel the best on the court, then you need to do that. And if that's not what 99% of other people do, that's absolutely fine. So I would say that. I'd say development as a player takes time, but you have to compete. You have to play relentless matches to be good, you
Yeah.
know. But if you want to keep talking about coaching, you can't be good if you're not in elite, ridiculous physical shape. You know,
Yeah.
you've got to be in phenomenal shape.
Yeah.
Obviously, not being in good shape affects your decision making, affects everything. So you've got to put the time in on the conditioning too.
I wish I knew something about that, to be honest, James. I need to get back into that.
Yeah.
It's,
Me too.
think, and staying along that college line too, if we get more specific, is in terms of scheduling, that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about right now is what was your first initial thought when it came to the announcement that the championships were being played in the fall slash winter instead of the spring?
Yeah, I understand it. I understand it from a standpoint of had deep runs as a team, and a player is playing the next day at 9 a.m. and they are completely done.
Yeah.
They're done, you know, and it puts a major risk on not only health for that moment, but in the long term. Like if
Yeah.
players are making the NCAA tournament, they probably have a pretty bright future in the sport and want to play professional tennis. So from a burnout standpoint, I totally get it. But this is a trial right now, right?
Yeah.
It's a trial. And I think it will go back to how it was. And the reason why is it didn't feel like that this year. I was on site at Waco at Baylor, phenomenal setup for NCAAs.
Oh yeah.
So much court, so much space, easy to get to somewhat, hotels or just down the street. Anyway, that's a different topic. But I think it will go back to how it was, because when I was there, yes, it was the NCAA tournament, but for some reason it just didn't feel like that. You
Yeah.
know, I think the level was high, but if you go back to the NCAA tournament in 2022 at Champaign, go look at
Yeah.
that men's draw, right? It was
Yeah.
insane. It was absolutely insane. That was when Shelton won it.
Yeah.
I'd love to do some digging there on the number of players that and where they are now in that event. So I think it should go back to May. I totally believe that. I think that again, going back to the journey, like if you're a coach and you bring in a player from Middle East or from Europe,
Yeah.
right? And they don't even know what NCAA means,
Yeah.
right? And their family background is a struggle. You know, they don't come from wealth. They're struggling financially. In my opinion, if I was to rewind the tape and coach again, I would have them stay on campus as much as possible, right? Relating to UTR, I would have them play as many PTT events as possible. Why? Because they're guaranteed matches, they're guaranteed the prize money, which they need, right? But also, on a Saturday night, they can go to the football game or the basketball game and adjust to American culture, right? Like, this is America. This is an amazing country. This is an amazing university system. And I feel like there's a lot of players that come internationally that don't actually appreciate and understand that, right? Because they're traveling so much.
Yeah.
So the whole schedule in general, there's for a coach, there's no, when do you stop
Yeah.
as a
And
coach? When do you stop?
excuse me. Along those lines too, if we think about how much players and coaches have to be on, I think one thing I learned from Grant Chen, the head coach at SMU, that this is a 24/7 job. And
Yeah.
what's crazy about tennis is that Tennis feels like the only job that never stops. There's never downtime. There's never, you have to be on every single day until you get to the top level, where you then maybe get a month out of the year to take off because you're financially stable. And from that perspective, it becomes, how do we now allow players and coaches to have downtime when we're now pushing the schedule to be so spread out? And that's not just from them. It's also from, if we think about a budgeting standpoint, how are coaches supposed to budget their entire or allocate their money to these tournaments if they have to go to one big tournament and then in the fall, and then all of a sudden, by the way, we're not having team at the same time, or we're not doing individual at the same time. So now we have to plan another extra amount of money that these kids now have to partake in. And it becomes a issue within that as well. So I agree with getting guaranteed matches and allowing it, but the issue I'm having with it is we're not seeing all the talent that we have in college tennis participating when that fall time is scheduled to be kind of the warm up to the team and individuals in the spring.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, as a coach, I mean, I'm in my role right now with UTR. I mean, a lot of my day to day is speaking with coaches and speaking with what they need from camps or circuits or PTTs, and trying to genuinely, as a middleman, help, right? That's honestly what we're trying to do at UTR, is help, right? But the 90-95% of the coaches I'm talking to at the end of the fall, they're all burnt out and pissed off, right? Because all they've done is get in a minivan and get back on at Sunday at midnight. And then, they're up at 6 a.m. taking one of their kids to school. Like, it's not sustainable, So my opinion is this: you play hidden duels as a team, right? You line up, they are so much fun. I think a lot of coaches would back me up on that. They're so much fun. You play as a team, their individual results, you travel as a team, you build team chemistry, you go stay in a nice house, you go somewhere cool, or you stay at home. You host PTT events, or you take your team to a PTT event. You get the matches, right? If you have guys that are at the level, like a Colton Smith, who, by the way, is playing the Arizona PTT this week, sign of a good team when a guy 300 in the world and the next guy who's 600 in the world, who are going to play one and two, are playing the home. That's a sign of a good team. But anyway, you play these events, and if you have guys that are really good and they want to go play pro tournaments, they go do that, right? They go do that on their own. But for a coach, there's no downtime. It's fall, recruit when the portal opens, spring, recruit when the portal opens, and then travel to recruit, then do camps, then start again, right? It's just a lot. Something needs to change, I think.
It's the responsibility becomes head coaches used to have or do everything because it was one or two roles, right? It was coaching on the court and then recruiting. Now, it's, at least in my opinion, it's become, now I have to be basically an agent to recruit these players with NIL deals. I have to coach them on the court. I need to recruit. I need to travel to go to the recruit. I need to figure out which kids are coming into the portal and which kids aren't. How do I fix my team with people leaving if I don't have enough recruits, but I need to go to the portal? So it's, and I just had a conversation with Jordan, the new head coach for Auburn women. He's telling me, like, with the portal, it becomes such a difficult thing to manage because then you're basically, it's like watching a stock market. You never know who's going to go in, what's going to happen. If it, do you save a spot for a player if the portal's really good that year? Do we not? So it becomes a whole nother role for coaches that puts another amount of stress, which makes it even harder for them.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No,
And
things are changing.
things are changing for sure. And if we get to your role at Universal Tennis and UTR Sports, with the PTTs, the now introduced tour card, the scheduling, and you do a lot of promotion of this on your Instagram as well. And it's basically like a news flash of where PTT tournaments are, which is awesome. For you, what do you kind of touched on it for pro tennis tour events for you guys. What are you trying to get out of, or what are you trying to, I guess, what's the end goal with your PTT tour? What do you see this going towards?
Yeah, great question. Well, first of all, we are targeting aspiring pros, right? If someone's a 14-4 and they are ranked top three in the US, they need to go get wild cards to challengers and get out of the futures as quickly as possible. And hopefully within a year, they're in the top 150 and they're making qualies of slams. That's what they need to be doing, right? Our target is aspiring pros who simply need to develop, get stronger, get fitter, and they need the matches. On top of that, they're making money. They're getting guaranteed matches and they're getting guaranteed money. If they lost every single match, they make money if they're at home, right? So that's the big thing that we can bring is I think a lot of coaches get frustrated at the end of the fall because they don't know where they are. They don't know where their team is. They don't know where their guys are. Well, if you played a PTT, you're going to sit there in a pretty relaxed way. I think that's another thing nice about a PTT. It's somewhat relaxed competition for the most part. You're going to sit there and you're going to watch your guys play back to back to back all day long. And by the end of the week, you're going to have 50 matches for your team, and you're going to know exactly what you need to work on, right? You're going to be like, that guy's, I thought he could play two or three, but actually, I think he might be a great 5-6 guy because he doesn't like pace. Whatever, right? But the end goal is, well, just so you know, 2024 tw in 2025 we're doubling the tour in size, right? From the number of events to matches played, locations across the world, it's doubled. We've introduced the tour card, right? Which incentivizes players to make money, right? To strive and push for a goal. There's a full ranking system there, which actually just got released the other day, which I thought was pretty cool. But there's a bonus payment at the end of the year from everyone from first through 100 on the men's and women's side. So if you are a mid 13 or a high 13 and you play eight events, they'll count your best eight events, you probably have a good shot at making 10K. Right. I think a lot of questions I get are compliance rules about prize money and stuff like that. At the end of the calendar year, as long as they've covered their expenses, they're fine. It's not per event, it's at the end of the calendar year. So anyway, that's where we're going. I think the next step for PTTs is linking to potential wild cards for challengers. That's the next goal. So we are, to be honest, taking off right now, big time, very busy. So it's exciting.
Would it be just for the US for the wild cards, or would it be worldwide?
I think it depends on connections, it depends on locations, anywhere.
And when we go from challengers, do you think, would it start with challengers and eventually get to the tour level, or do you think challengers is the main way? Because if we're you, we talked about ITF a little bit in terms of what the ITF does versus what you do. If you were to say that playing PTT can get you a better chance into playing challengers and 125Ks for the women, would that be something that you're looking at in terms of not replacing or competing, but kind of allowing players to compete more with a PTT event?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've always said this, like based on the prize money structure in ITFs and the travel that you have to do, you better get out as quickly as possible if you're a player, right? You look at Walton, for example, right? Look how quickly he got out of the futures. Shelton, same thing. The list is endless. Like if you can get out quickly and get into the challengers, you're giving yourself a shot at bigger prize money, more points, and then trying to get into slams, right? Which is the major money maker for players, obviously.
Here's a question for you. Will UTR ever try or attempt to get ranking points in their system for the tours?
It's definitely been discussed, but
Okay.
at this time,
No.
no information on that.
Okay. That's fine. I'm just curious to see in terms of transitioning how this works. And I
Yeah,
mean,
great relationship with the ATP. Trying to build players to then go take off,
yeah.
right? Walton and Shelton actually played each other in the final of a PTT in Florida in
Yeah.
22. And then from there they made a bit of money and then went off and
Now they're
did their
doing
thing.
this. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And PTTs last a week, just like a regular tournament, correct? Or does it vary?
Yes, it lasts a week. In some situations in 25, we can introduce the 4-day format.
Okay.
One of the things that I'm expressing some coaches is Indiana are hosting in a couple weeks, right? So instead of playing the kickoff weekend, they're going to stay at home. They're going to, who knows where they could have traveled to, but they're going to stay at
Oh.
home. They're going to get the matches and introduce the 4-day event. I think
Okay.
another cool thing is we can organize these matches around kids' classes schedules. Depending when they're in school or when they're not, like let us know and we'll sort that out. So five, so week long or 4 day.
Okay, have you had what have people noticed between the you haven't done the 4-day week, correct? Not yet.
First one will be at Indiana.
Okay. What are your concerns with doing a shorter form schedule versus a week? Are there any concerns or any advantages of doing 4-day versus a week?
I think it honestly varies. I think it depends on the host. I think it like there might be a situation in the fall where we have a week-long event at Baylor, right? But at the same time, we have a 4-day event going on at Texas A&M, or we have a 4-day event going on at LSU, which is somewhat close by, but it's better for that school, right? So I think we would prefer week-long events just from the standpoint of like, this is our model. Our model is aspiring pros, getting the matches, right? Obviously, all matches are on Prime, which is something that's honestly not talked about enough. Like,
I
you
agree.
go on Amazon Prime, it's Thursday Night Football, UTR PTT, right? Like, that's pretty cool. Some streams out there, you have to really kind of scratch the camera to make sure there's nothing wrong with your camera. But anyway.
Just put your thumb up to it and just make sure there's
Yeah, like
nothing going on
Amazon
there.
Prime is a great stream, and people can watch from all over the world,
Yeah.
families, coaches, whoever.
And the relationship that it seems like you're talking about when it comes to not just from a player's perspective, but from a coach's perspective, you really are trying to bridge that gap between having a coach kind of rely on PTT in that sense to give their kids matches or to have their kids compete when there isn't that much, I guess, in if they're not having enough matches during their schedule or if they're not fulfilling the playing potential of some of these players. It seems like one of your focuses of is that coach to PTT relationship. How do you strengthen that relationship to coaches that may not play PTT that you would want to play PTT?
Yeah, I think great question. If coaches don't want to host or have their guys play or players play PTTs, that's absolutely fine. Like I said, everyone has their own way of reaching their peak, right? But I'm speaking on experience. Like I know how I felt November 15th at the end of the fall, and I'm burnt out, I'm dark, right? And I don't know where we are as a team. Like, I'm like, Where are we? Like, are we? Who's going to play three? Like, this guy has played 12 matches. Like, how are we meant to know where we are? Because I think one of the biggest things about success is getting your lineup right towards the start, so that you can make the national indoors, so you can get these ranked wins under your belt. Being top eight is massive at the end of the year because you get the super regional host, right? So, I'm speaking on experience with PTTs because we hosted multiple at Tennessee, and at the end of the week, we're going as coaches. So and so has to work on that. He has to work on this. He's a four. He's a six. He's probably not in right now. He might be our best player. Now we can go work on it, right?
And
So.
from that coach's perspective, it just gives you more of an idea of where they are, especially who they are as well.
Yeah, definitely. But every coach has their philosophy, and I completely respect that. Just if I would say that if you're in a position like I just described on November 15th at the end of the fall, just let me know. Like, I'm sure there's ways we can get some of your guys in draws, get them matches, get them prepared, and get them as ready as possible for the season.
I agree. And honestly, James, if you have a wild card open to one of these, I would most likely would like one just to see how I can do.
Okay.
I'm so down. I am so down for that.
What's your UTR?
Oh, it's not great right now. I'm not gonna say it out loud. I
Okay.
haven't played an official. We're gonna keep that off the record for now. If you want to figure it out, you can go find it, but I'm not gonna say it out here. I haven't played it in a while. We're just gonna keep that simple. This is such an interesting concept to me in terms of when it comes to another tour for players, and it's really finding that niche, and I feel like you've found that with aspiring pros because you
Right.
know that the tour there's a reason why it's almost like a transitional tour, if I can say that.
Yep.
Because
Yeah.
it's you're trying to get these guys to the next level by having them do your events to then proceed to like
Correct.
you've passed these events. You've made it through this first obstacle to get to a pro.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. If Ashka, I don't know if you saw an interview that Canal Tennis Account did in Spain. He's playing a PTT right now in
Yeah,
Barcelona.
former top 40 player. I remember you guys saying that. He's
Yeah,
where's he where is he playing the PTT?
he's playing in Barcelona this week, along with Lamas and another guy who's top 200. But anyway, he said on an interview yesterday or today, I can't remember which day, that he is playing the event to get rhythm, quote, rhythm and matches, until he knows his level is there to go back and do the thing. That is exactly what we're about, right? We're not trying to compete with an ATP 250, right? But I do know that I have coached former players who have played, traveled the world, gone to some pretty tough places. They're playing ITF futures, and not only are they losing considerable money, right? But they're getting worse. They're getting worse, right? Like, we've had guys take the fall off. I don't know if you know about the whole fall off thing, but sometimes, like, Draxel did it, Monday did it. We had some other guys do it. There's guys that do it. I'm pretty sure Diallo might have done it as well. But it allows guys to go get the ranking, right? Go see where you can get to, and then we'll see you in January. Well, what happens is they get their ranking up, but when they get back in January, they're probably about 15% worse than where they were. And the player would be the first one to tell you that, because they're off schedule, they're off routine, they're not getting their needs, they're playing matches, they're getting 30 minutes a day to practice, right? So hopefully I'm answering your question. I'm going on
No, you are.
tangents.
It's you are because it's we talk about that longevity of schedule and in terms of finding your rhythm and finding yourself as a player. That's exactly what, in my eyes, is what the PTT is doing, and it kind of clears up what I thought the tour, your tour was versus what it actually is, and I think it
Yeah.
makes a lot more sense now in terms of what it needs to or what it means to accomplish for a lot of these guys.
Yeah. We are looking for kids, men and women, who love to compete, that are striving to develop, that need the matches, right? That need the matches, that can go out there and just find a rhythm, right? Find a rhythm on the match court instead of being one and done, then go to the next one and winning one and losing, then go to the next one and done. Like that's it's very difficult. But anyway.
I can feel the stress of you talking about like people losing money in a place that where they spend 5 grand to then make back to 1200, not even. And that's why a lot of these guys that are playing ITFs are picking places that have 15Ks back to back to back. And I remember during COVID too, what was it? There was a during COVID Challengers, there was like four straight in Italy, and guys were like posting up just to live in the same villa or hotel room for a month trying to get matches in because they didn't want to spend any money, especially during COVID. That's a wild time.
I mean, Carousel, just I mean, his channel is phenomenal. Like he's top 200 in the world, and he showed that he lost 12K last year. I also saw a guy top 200 who made 87,000 in 2024 in prize money, which is sounds okay, but he's losing considerable money.
I
Top
who
200 in the world, that's a phenomenal player.
that top 200 you made 87K.
Yeah.
That's
I'm
nuts.
going to do a comparison with golf because
I feel like
it's
that's the
quite
bit.
amazing.
Well, that's the I th think th that's the biggest thing when we look at numbers in terms of revenue made versus expenses. Like, I think that's one of the hardest things to compare. Like, golf is an individual sport, but sponsors pay an insane amount of money for them so they can survive, like the Korn Ferry Tour. I think I mentioned that to someone recently. Like, they have a tour that can help them get their PGA card while still making a living. If they're making 1.2 million a year, that's a like an average year for them. I'm going, are you fucking kidding? Like, there's no way that you're making 1.2 million a year and your expenses are paid and you're going, how do I not do that? And it's almost like, and I want to get your opinion on this, thinking about this, like LIV Golf, when they get paid a salary plus money on top of tournaments, do you think that's something that could happen in tennis where if you maintain a ranking, you can get a base salary?
Yeah, I do. And I think it should. I really do. Like what these players are doing, how much they're playing, how little off time they get, I think they deserve salaries, 100%. And from our perspective, like we're also trying to make this fun. You know, like tennis doesn't have to be win,
Stress.
lose, okay, miserable, losing money. It doesn't have to be like that. Like we're hosting events in phenomenal locations, Dubai plus housing, LA, like amazing universities throughout the world, right? Australia, like go to Australia for a month, go with three of your teammates and go rent an Airbnb or whatever and enjoy yourself, play a couple PTTs and make some money and go have fun, right? So that's the other angle from us, is like trying to make that this a fun environment.
And actually, this makes me think in terms of that too, is would PTT ever do a base salary, almost like a league, to guarantee money despite the bonus pot if you make the top 100 of the rankings?
Honestly, I have no idea. I think it's a great idea. I think that rewarding loyal players is something that every tour should do, whether it's golf, tennis, whatever. But from that standpoint, I'm really not sure.
That's okay. And James, I can't thank you enough for joining us and to help us show us what the Pro Tour is like for you guys and to see what UTR is still building. And we had Chase on a while ago to talk about the basically the NIT tournament for college tennis. We love talking about this with you guys, and we're excited to see what the PTT has to offer in the future, especially in 2025. And hopefully Maybe that'll be a goal of ours to play one PTT by the end of 2025. So we'll see. We'll see if we can get there. But James, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. Is there any links that people can go check out, the player card, tour events, anything like that that you would like to shout out?
Yeah, I think all players need to know what the tour card is and what we're doing. You know, if they play two events, they get $500 worth of Fabletics gear.
Okay.
Free gear sounds pretty cool. They
Yeah.
also get refunded. If they play two events, their power subscription gets refunded. That's $150. If they play four events, if they're one of the first 100 people to play four events, they get $750 in their account. So if I'm a player and an aspiring pro, I would play the events, make some money, play some matches, and if you like the events, great. If you don't, that's okay. Just give it a shot. That's kind of what I would say.
I just had to hit the record button for this, and we're going back. NIL to me is a topic that is so confusing and great, but at the same time, very annoying and could really take away, at least in my opinion, towards bigger schools, the opportunity for smaller schools to have a chance. Because what became student athletes now became student employees. And I think that's what's really frustrating in tennis sometimes. And like you said before I re-hit the record button, a lot of coaches are coming to you about NILs. And I want to hear your opinion on what's happening here. Where can we start?
No, I think first of all, every single school is different, right?
Absolutely.
In our team, we're definitely trying to help schools, right? We've entered the NIL space. So we have been coordinating with a lot of different schools, a lot of different collectives, and really learning. It's actually been fascinating, to be honest. I'm deeply passionate.
James? Oh no. You're good now. You froze for a
Uh-oh.
second. Did I miss? Oh no, you froze again. I can hear you now.
There?
Yeah, are you good?
Is that on my end?
I have no idea. It's
Oh,
all good.
shoot. I don't think it
No,
is.
it's okay. We're good. So let's, like,
Are we
what were you
starting
saying?
again?
No, we're good. We can keep going. We'll just pick up from where you were. You've been working with collective units. You've been trying to help these coaches in these programs with NIL in terms of what's happening in terms of funding and everything like that. So what's been your consensus from college coaches about the NIL space?
I think the big thing is that everyone gets a little nervous when you mention NIL. Everyone gets a little like, oh, da, 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 da. Like, from a company standpoint, we have spoken with the appropriate professionals numerous times to know exactly what's going to happen, likely, and what it's going to look like in the future, right? So collectives, people are saying like collectives are going to go away. Collectives aren't going to go away, right? They're going to stay where they are. What's going to change is, number one, revenue share, right? And number two is fair market value, right? Those are the two things that are going to change. Every single school has the ability to you to has to raise $20.5 million by next summer, right? The settlement case is April 7th, right? April 7th, where they are basically going to say that $2.7 billion has to go back to the athletes, right?
Which
So,
makes sense in a way, to be honest.
yes, it does. I know everyone will have their opinions about that, but yes, it does. So what's going to happen is I think the stats are something like 59% comes from the school and 41% comes from the NCAA, right? Something like that. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm close. So what's going to happen is you're going to see schools, every school will be different based on their setup of sports, but you're going to see probably 13 to 16 million go to football, right? You're going to see 2 to 4 million go to men's basketball. You're going to see about 500 to a million go to women's basketball. You're going to see another 500 to a million go to baseball. And then the rest, which is about 900K, goes to every other sport,
Trickles, yeah.
right? Which is fair enough, non-revenue sports, right? So what college tennis has to be very careful with, in my opinion, is if you're demanding schools to go to all these events and travel and travel and travel, that is not sustainable, right? Something has to change to save money for a college tennis program, right? That's my opinion anyway. Something has to change. But the other thing with college tennis is it is such an exciting, like I'm not coaching anymore, right? But I'm thinking about going and watching Tennessee play, and going and watching the doubles point, or going and watching, if I'm in Nashville, going and watching Vandy play and watch the double. Like, it is such an exciting product, but people don't watch it. People don't watch the sport. And that's the frustrating thing. And that's where I think from our standpoint is we're trying to make this fun. We're trying to, grow the game, grow college tennis, work with coaches. And I think we're succeeding in that, but I'm not sure. So, yeah.
Well, I was just chime in that sense because from what I understand, VCU is going to start paying student athletes money starting in 2025, 2026 season. They're going to start paying them full out. And there are other programs that may, like, I guess Ohio State, all Ohio State athletes have a Chipotle Platinum card where they get a free entree every single day, which honestly could be the equivalent of paying some players. But if we're looking at VCU specifically, how much are they going to pay tennis players compared to everyone else? And how
I
are they going
think.
to compare that to other programs like a Texas A&M that announced that they're having people pay for like selective seating in their tennis stadiums now, which it grants them access, which is like special Aggie access. Like, how do between big schools that do that to smaller schools that don't have that, how is that going to work?
I think you'll see probably at mid-majors or smaller Power Four schools, you'll probably see anywhere from they'll be put on quote salaries from 10 to 20K a year. Whereas at bigger schools, they'll be put on 50 to 100K a year. And I'm talking about tennis. Like one of the hardest things I think that is going to occur is that is putting a fair market value on a tennis player, right? Like if a fair market value is in, what's the fair market value in Miami compared to a small college town? Like surely there's a difference there. And I feel like that's where it's really going to struggle. There's also going to be loopholes around it. I guarantee it. There's going to be loopholes about how you can give to players. Like right now, the best players are probably worth 150, 200 plus thousand dollars. That's what they're getting paid. Probably more than that. I could be wrong, but I would say around there.
An 18-year-old that's just been like playing one of the most expensive sports in the world, just being handed $100,000 to $200,000. Like, here you go, plus full tuition, plus board, plus everything. I'm like,
And if I'm a player
how?
and you have the ability to do that, you take it. You take that and
Why
you run
wouldn't
with
you?
it. But I think things will change in terms of how much they can get, the fair market value on that, and the revenue share that the school puts in place. So it's exciting times.
It's definitely different times. It's definitely different times.